Our lesson tonight is out of 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 16 to chapter 9, verse 5, giving with protective checks and balances. 2 Corinthians was written to defend the authenticity of Paul's apostleship and his message to a church of believers who are susceptible to heeding false teachers who critiqued him. One of the problems created by this crisis may have been that the false teachers had taught Paul's readers to divert some monies to themselves, monies that were initially intended to go to needy Jerusalem saints, and of course that would be a problem. If so, Paul had to give careful instructions to counter errant views on giving by false teachers, and 2 Corinthians 8, 16 to 9, 5 continues that instruction, teaching believers to give with protective checks and balances. I'd like to read the chapter, the passage, and then we'll look at it. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, beginning at verse 16. But thanks be to God, which put the same earnest care into the heart of Titus for you. For indeed he accepted the exhortation, but being more forward, of his own accord he went unto you. And we have sent him with him the brother whose praise is in the gospel throughout all the churches. And that only, but who was also chosen of the churches to travel with us with this grace, which is ministered by us to the glory of the same Lord and declaration of your ready mind. Avoiding this, that no man should blame us in this abundance which is administered by us, providing for honest things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. And we have sent with them our brother, whom we have oftentimes proven diligent in many things, but now much more diligent upon the great confidence which I have in you. Whether any do inquire of us, he is my partner and fellow helper concerning you, or our brethren, be inquired of, they are messengers of the churches and the glory of Christ. Wherefore, show ye to them and before the churches the proof of your love and of our boasting on your behalf. But as touching the ministering to the saints, it is superfluous for me to write to you, for I know the forwardness of your mind, for which I boast of you to them of Macedonia, that Achaia was ready a year ago, and your zeal has provoked very many. Yet have I sent the brethren, lest our boasting of you should be in vain in this behalf, that as I said, ye may be ready. Lest haply, if they of Macedonia come with me and find you unprepared, that we, that is, we say not ye, should be ashamed in this same confident boasting. Therefore I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren that they would go before unto you and make up beforehand your bounty, whereof ye had noticed before, that the same might be ready as a matter of bounty, and not as of covetousness or of greed. Okay, false teachers were notoriously greedy for dishonest gain from their hearers. The Apostle Paul brings this out in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 5. He said that perverse disputings of men of corrupt minds and destitute of the truth, supposing that financial gain is godliness, from such withdraw yourself. There are false teachers that thought that getting money or the amount of money that you got actually determined whether or not you were godly. Sounds like evangelicals, many of them today, who are gauging their spiritual success based upon what's happening in the coffers of the church. That's a false way of ministering. But anyway, if so, Paul wanted to defend his credibility as a true teacher to readers who had heard slander about him by false teachers. And if he also wanted to get his readers to give money for the needy Jerusalem believers, Paul had to provide ample, credible checks and balances, lest he or anyone with him be charged with stealing from the money. See what you've got? You've got a couple of men who are taking this enormous amount of money that has been collected from a number of churches in Macedonia and then Corinth, and they're taking this money all the way back to Jerusalem to give to the Jerusalem saints. Well, who knows how much money the Jerusalem saints are going to get? You've got to make sure that the men that you're entrusting this money to are credible. It's very, very important to have credible people. We, incidentally, as a church, do this. We have people that pick up the money. We have the treasurer. We have the assistant treasurer. We also have two auditors who check the work of the treasurer. And just this year, we decided to make a report, make them give a report. Actually, the bylaws for many of years have said that the auditors are supposed to have a report in the annual meeting. We just hadn't realized it as a board, so we read it in the minutes this past year. So we decided, okay, we better ask the auditors to do that. I think it's a great idea. And that way the auditors sit down and they go through the books with the treasurer at the end of the year. They check everything. They check the giving. They check the payments. They check the payments to the missionaries, the bills and everything. They check how the balance comes out. And it's really neat. And that way that the treasurer gets his work checked, the assistant treasurer. And so we've got four people. And all four people are voted every year. Every year they have to be voted into office. So there's a direct control that the congregation has on who's handling the money, which is very good. Well, to this end, Paul wrote about adequate, credible checks and balances of collections in chapter 8, verse 16 to chapter 9, verse 5. And he provides us excellent guidelines in handling collected monies from donating believers today. We certainly want to be credible in how we handle the money that is given in our boxes. First of all, Paul was sending his fellow worker Titus to his Corinthian readers, a man that Paul personally trusted and who was earnestly desiring of ministering to the Corinthian believers. So this is a man that Paul knew well. In fact, Paul, one of the epistles, the pastoral epistles that Paul wrote is written to Titus. You have 1st and 2nd Timothy and Titus. Those are the three Pauline epistles, actually pastoral epistles, and Titus was one of those men. However, Paul knew that more than Titus was needed to take the collection from Corinth for the Jerusalem saints. For since he was Paul's close associate, he could possibly be charged with pilfering the collection in order to give some of the money to Paul. So a second unnamed, widely recognized believer, likely one from Macedonia, would go with Titus as a credible co-auditor of the collection. The co-auditor was known and famous among all the churches for his preaching of the gospel. So he had their confidence that he was a true believer and a true teacher. See, nobody doubted this man's salvation. He had evangelized, he had taught in a number of the churches, and everybody knew this man was a man of God. So this is, I don't know if it was Apollos or who it was, but he was well known. Also, he had been appointed by the other giving churches to go with Paul's team as a co-auditor of the transfer of the collections from their churches to the needy Jerusalem saints. Including this special believer as an auditor would glorify God and show the goodwill of Paul's team. See, this is a man who came required, highly recommended, not only by Paul, not only by one church in Macedonia, but a bunch of churches. And Paul is letting the Corinthians know this man is recommended not just by a couple of people. Well, he's backed by a slew of churches in the area. So it's just, you know, there are many, many people who knew this man. So he's a man of tremendous credibility. Third, that's not enough. Third, in addition to Titus and this widely renowned, credible co-auditor and minister of the gospel, would go a third co-auditor, one who had repeatedly proven himself to be trustworthy and zealous for the Lord, who was likely appointed by the Macedonian churches to audit the collections. See, the Macedonians wanted a representative of themselves. Okay, it's nice for Paul to talk about this man is highly recommended by these other churches and so forth, but the Macedonians wanted someone, and so you got a Macedonian, you have this other minister, you got Titus. You have a pretty wide group of people here who are representing different types of people. It may have been that when the Corinthians took up their collections, they might have wanted one of their people to go and join the team. Why not, you know? And that way they would have more people involved. So it's interesting, this man, this third man, had great confidence in Paul's readers and he was eager to visit them. Fourth, and I think this is extremely important, Paul did not go with this collection team to avoid creating problems by his presence. And this is what chapter 9, 1 to 5 about. Is all about. The apostle wanted to avoid the possibility of being charged with greed and dishonest gain, so he did not go with these other men to Corinth to gather the believers' donations, that no giving occur out of undue pressure because of his presence as a dominant apostle. I think this is so neat. Paul did this in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 2. He told them, upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store as God has prospered, that there be no collections when I come. I don't want people to be collecting when I come, because then it could be charged that the presence of Paul put pressure on them to give. Paul says, I don't want that to happen. Do your giving in my absence. When I come, All right? The monies are just handed over. They're already been collected. They're handed over, and there's someone else actually is handling the money, not Paul. Also, Paul was concerned that were the Corinthian believers not to be ready with their collection when the men from Paul arrived to pick it up, they and Paul might be embarrassed in the presence of the co-auditors from Macedonia whose fellow believers had eagerly given. And that would create tension because the Macedonian believers had given heavily, and here the Corinthians, they hadn't even taken the collection yet, and they might be embarrassed. And if Paul's there, it makes it all the more a problem because, remember, there's been tension between Paul and the Corinthians in the past. Paul doesn't want that tension. He doesn't even want to open the door for that, so he says, I'm staying out of it. I'm staying home. All right, I'm away. So you take care of it. That intention would inflame old hurts of the past between Paul and his Corinthian readers, and we know that tension back in 2 Corinthians 7, 8, and 10. So Paul wanted to avoid, in an effort to rebuild a healthy, positive relationship with his readers. I think this is a tremendous example. And Paul was a messenger. He was a dominant figure. So of all people, he needed to stay out of it. So taking great care to guard against charges of greed for dishonest gain in receiving the collections from the Corinthians for the Jerusalem saints, Paul sent trusted fellow worker Titus with a co-auditor, a renowned servant of God, likely from Macedonia, whom all the other giving churches recommended, together with a third proven zealous co-auditor who was selected by the Thessalonian believers in particular, while also keeping himself out of the collection party, to avoid pressuring the Corinthian donors as a dominant apostle and to guard his relationship with the Corinthian believers in case they might not then be ready with their collections. So, a bunch of principles here. May we select multiple, not just one, multiple, and we have multiple. We actually select four, treasurer, assistant treasurer, and two auditors, okay? May we select multiple trustworthy treasurers and auditors to handle our donations. May we not pressure others to give, but protect the privacy and the goodwill of donors. We're doing this as a church right now. None of our board members knows who gives what in the church except what they themselves give. I don't know what any of the men on the board give. They don't know what I give, okay? The only people who know are the treasurer, the assistant treasurer, and the two auditors. That's it. Now, 1 year, we did get a run out. We were trying to figure out where the people were in the giving. The treasurer ran a run out of people, and they didn't have any names, as to what the spread of the giving was. So X number of people are giving so much a month or a week, so much. X number of people are giving this much, and so forth. So we had a spread as to what the giving was, because we wanted to be sensitive as to whether we should raise the giving or not. But we didn't know who gave what, okay? And that's really, really healthy, I believe. I'm so glad as a pastor, I don't know, because, you know, you could be affected by someone who might be a big donor, and if someone is not a big donor, you might not be as affected in your relationship. And that sours the relationship. The relationship should not be determined by money. It should be determined by relationships based entirely separate from that. So I'm very glad for the privacy that we have of the boxes that are back there. And that's very, very good. Also, may we who minister the word and receive support from donors totally exclude ourselves from handling the collections to edify all involved. I try to practice this myself. I don't not only not handle the collections, but I try to stay out of all, even if the board is discussing the budget for the next year, I don't deal with the numbers or not. The board will ask me, are you content with this? If we want to do this, we want to give you a cost of living raise and so forth. And I say, thank you, that would be fine. The Lord is amply meeting our needs, and just let it go with that. But I don't get involved in that. And it was the board's decision. For example, this $11,000 that was given last year, and then they've decided this year to do another $11,000 to the missionaries. That was entirely something that came from the board. That was the members of the board, the deacons. They made that decision, and all I did, they cleared it with me. Yes, it's biblical. Certainly you can do that, but I didn't make that recommendation or anything. I don't feel responsible for that, and I believe that's very, very important. This passage has been just a godsend for me. I want to share something with you. It was just a matter of weeks ago, I was approached by a man who's the head of a very small mission. And I would imagine, complete with himself as the head of the mission, the president of the mission, and maybe all the board members, there might be 10 people maximum, which is really a tiny mission. And he wanted to come and present his work here in the church and everything. And I looked at everything. There were some concerns I had about theology and so forth, but I was really bothered by the fact that this mission was so small. And so I contacted the man and I said, you know, I would recommend that you get your mission to join ECFA. ECFA is Evangelical Council on Financial Accountability. What it is an organization that all major missions join, in which they invite an outside external audit of all of their finances. And so there's an independent audit that comes in, and they make sure that the money's actually going to missionaries or that it's actually going to the mission field and so forth. And I shared this with the gentleman. I said, this is for your protection, because otherwise, you know, if people are going to be giving hundreds of thousands of dollars to your mission and there are only 10 people here, what are those people doing with the money? You know, you might go out in the mission field and take pictures of pretty buildings and everything and say that you've built those, but how do we know? See, and this is why there have been abuses in this area. So I recommended that to him. And he wasn't interested in going that direction, so he wasn't coming to our particular church because of that. I was concerned about that. But I was really thinking, you know, if we were to get something, a mission entity in here, and we were suddenly start taking and supporting it, and then we're to find out down the road that these few people were diverting the funds over to something completely different, we would feel bad. And then I would feel bad that I had invited the person in. But getting a hold of a mission organization or a mission leader where they are backed up by ECFA, which I'm very familiar with. In fact, my parents' mission, SIM, was one of the charter missions in the ECFA. We have independent outside audits that check everything, fine. But I think this president of the mission actually handles the money too, which is really not a good thing because there's income for him and whatnot. So there really need to be checks and balances. But when I got into this passage and I was preparing with it, the Lord really settled my heart, indicating, Don, you're right. Don't worry about it. It's good to have checks and balances. We didn't, with this mission leader, I wasn't trying to say that they were misusing their monies. I just recommended that they get membership in ECFA for their protection, and that would make us feel better. And this is what Paul was doing. We want to look good not only in the sight of God, but also in the sight of men. And that's what we need to do as a church, is to watch that how we handle our monies, that we're doing that, which is credible. I like it also when we took our vote at the annual meeting. Our board chairman and monitor of the meeting, Dave Slate, asked for two men in the church, and he asked two men, two different families, to check the ballots. And so together they would check the ballots. And that way we had a bit of a check and a balance right there in regards to the ballots. We can't just take it for granted that just because we recommended the board nominated people that everybody's just going to be voted. We don't want to take that for granted, but we want to protect. And checks and balances provide credibility. And we want to be credible with one another, with the world that is around us, and we also want to be credible with God. So that's what God wants us to do. He wants us to use protective checks and balances.